Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show. This is the Pop Rocks Radio Talk Show. I'm your host, pop art painter Jamie Rocks, and this is the big show. You found it. I'm glad you did. I am very, very excited. It's the a nice breakup. We're heading towards of the week. We're heading towards the big weekend. I am, you know, honestly, if I didn't have a calendar in front of me, I wouldn't know what day it is. This is my zany time of year, man, the orders this year have been crazy. So I've just been, you know, painting nonstop in the daytime and at nighttime and, you know, whenever I can. And also this time of year is the big push for, all of my musician friends and the film folk to have their movies and new albums and singles and whatnot pushed out for the big day of, Christmas and all that. So it's a on both fronts of my little world here. It is just very busy, and but I love it. I love it because it just everything goes by so quick, and you blink and it's going to be over. And I'll tell you that week in between for me, that week in between Christmas and New Year's is usually pretty slow. It slows down a lot, and we don't even. We have our Christmas break and don't even schedule any shows. Not the case this year. I think we've got shows every day. So it just is continuing. And, I don't know if that's the pandemic or what the deal is, but I'm not complaining. And I hope this this momentum carries forth into the new year. So that would be awesome. Okay, so today I am super excited. I watched this film. I started watching this about a week ago, and I saw something shinier than it, and I took a break, and then I was going to go back, and then I forgot about it kind of. And I last night I was looking at the schedule and whatnot, and I said, oh man, I got to finish that movie. So I started it over from the very beginning instead of trying to catch up in the middle of it. I wanted a fresh viewing. And man, I dig this movie. And we've got the director on today with us, Mr. Chris Etheridge. And the movie is Haven's End. Chris, how are you, my friend?
Good. How you doing?
What's going on? I'm doing great. I am doing great.
I feel what you're saying. Like, it feels like this time of year is so hectic, right? And there's so many things going on and so much to do. Particularly when I've got a movie like Haven's End, we're promoting it constantly, and it's just, it's great, but it's definitely compressed,
Well, it's fantastic. It is a fantastic film. I have been a sucker. Yeah, absolutely, man. I have been a sucker for post-apocalyptic kind of themed films since I was a kid. The first one I ever saw was a made-for-TV movie that my parents absolutely forbid me to watch. I was like, 12 years old or something. I can't remember. I was a kid when it came out, called The Day After. And they're like, there's no way you can watch this film. And I snuck and watched it. Had night terror. Freaked out. I was putting canned food under my bed. And my father's like, hey, we live a half mile from the Air Force Base. You don't have to worry.
Yeah. Right.
You ain't going
to
be around. Come on out of there and everything will be fine. So I've just been, ever since then, I'm a little older, so, grew up in the 80s, and that was just kind of the world. People worried about that kind of stuff, People
were
like, oh.
Yeah.
And then it's weird because today, people are like, well, we don't have to worry about that. I'm like, I don't know, man. I check Twitter every morning and,
Right. It definitely feels like some of that's coming back. I also grew up in the 80s, so I hear you. And it definitely was a there's a different timbre to the feelings of that time. And then, yeah, as technology sort of it felt like for a little bit everything was calming down in the world, and now it's like maybe it's not that calm after all. Yeah.
No,
So.
yeah. Oh man, I'm telling you, and you never know. You know, it was weird because in the post 9/11, of course, the focus was trouble in the Middle East. You know, the people not
Right.
getting along, and it's going to spread, and all this and that, and that's serious. I don't want anybody to go, oh, just don't worry about that. But it's weird because the old enemies seem to be popping. You know, everybody's like, oh, Russia and China,
Right.
Korea,
Right.
you know, and I'm like, not Russia. You know, that's not good at
Yeah,
all.
it's a very unusual time, and you know, and I think the uncertainty, and not like intentionally for that specifically, but like just uncertainty in general, is one of those things that fuels this movie, you know.
Well, that's what I was going to say that I loved about it is because you kind of don't know. You know, I don't want to give anything away. I want people to watch the film.
Sure.
But at first, you don't know. It's not real clear. You know, you don't. Meanwhile, at KGB headquarters, you know, it doesn't start out. The
Right.
movie doesn't start
Yeah,
out that way at
we made
all.
a conscious decision not to fully explain it. Even, you know, and so that's, you know, and I like telling people that when, you know, like when they go in, I don't want, like, there's not going to be an explicit pat explanation. Like, I do think that the information is in there, and you know,
Right.
to kind of make your choices, and I know what I believe happens, you know, and then what the writer Michael Harper and I talked about, you know. But it's definitely open to interpretation on purpose, because I like movies like that. Like,
I do
I do
too.
think there's this sort of kind of modern, you know, let's explain everything, let's over explain, let's, like, you know exactly what's happened to the nth degree, and I felt like we had an opportunity here, particularly in a movie that's defined by uncertainty and lack of trust, to, you know, to, like, let's continue that on just a little bit. Like, let's continue that uncertainty into the theme of the movie and even into the viewer's experience a little bit. And I think, you know, so it was definitely a conscious choice to do that. And you know, and I think most people do like it. I think every now and then you'll get somebody who's like, ah, I don't know what happened, and I don't think that they know what happened. You know, but you know, that's not really
Right.
what was going on. We did make a conscious choice to leave it the way it is on purpose. And I think it's fun. Like, I think it's fun to, like, to me, my favorite memories of, you know, growing up and watching movies is talking about them afterwards. And I think this movie, you know, lends itself to, hey, have a conversation about what you think happened after you watch it, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, and that's what's, and I'm not just saying this, Chris, but it's very true. You know, that's what skilled filmmakers do. You know, like nobody, Hitchcock never just spelled everything out for everybody.
Right.
You know what I
Yeah,
mean?
no.
And it, you know, Kubrick, he doesn't give you a
Well,
play by play.
I'm not gonna, like, I don't really stand on the same
Yeah.
level as those guys, but I do appreciate the
No,
sentiment, and I
but
do, you know,
yes, but I'm saying though, that's what it makes a good film though, is it
right.
engages your brain and gets those gears turning. And you did this on several levels, not just with plot and storyline, but also just in genre. Because first you're like, okay, well, it says on here thriller. Oh, it's kind of a sci-fi thriller, I guess. But wait, there's a lot of dramatic flair going on here too. You know what I mean? And it's
Right. Oh
there's
yeah, it's
character
it, yeah.
interactions.
I keep using the phrase genre bending, because
Genre
and that's,
bending.
and Michael, to his credit, although I love this stuff and he knows I love this stuff, but Michael, when he wrote the script, you know, he threw the kitchen sink in there. Like,
Right.
it's yeah. There's sci-fi, there's horror, there's action, there's thriller and drama, like you said. That, like, it's yeah. It's there's no. It's very hard to categorize. Thriller is probably the easiest place for it to land, you know, but it's definitely a lot of things, and I love that. Like, I love mashing those things up. Like, there's, you know, there's no rules, you know. Like, just make sure you tell a good story and throw what you want in there, and that's what we did. So we have a lot of interesting things in there. Something for everybody.
Absolutely. Well, and one of the cool things too is I loved the tension and the character tension between Dr. Allison and her brother. Yeah, and everybody's,
Yeah.
you know, it's like, because if you think about it, you think about it, you don't know what's really going on, and
Sure.
the world's ending, all this shit's happening, and, you know, we all have friends or family, we all have that one person that you don't want to be in that situation with, you know, it's
Right.
like, oh, you know,
Right.
but chances are, you might wind up with them in that situation, and
Yeah,
when you
oh,
do, you know.
absolutely. Like and that's, I mean, and that's the core. Like if you the emotional core of the movie is are those two and their relationship, right? And the kind of clearly defined years of fighting and frustration between the two of them, you know, that precedes the opening of the movie. And that's just that it's just I think that that's if you want conflict, one of the easiest ways that can be universal to so many people is here's some family conflict, you know? Like,
oh, yeah, absolutely. And especially this time of year, too.
Right.
You know, it's one of those deals, you know, but we can all relate to it, you know, maybe
yeah.
not at this point in our life, but at some point in our life. And if you can't, if you don't have a family member that just got under your skin, guess what, ladies and gentlemen? It's probably you. You are
right.
that family member, you know.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it can go both ways, right? Like, there's no reason
right.
everybody isn't getting on somebody else's under somebody else's skin, for sure. I don't want to spoil the movie, but like that, you know, you might intrinsically lean towards one side in that conflict, but I'm not sure that it's black and white. You know, I'm not sure that there isn't that both of those parties have done
nope.
things in the past that are not conducive to the other side. You know,
right.
I think that that's and that's the beauty of it. Like, it's not like there's a lot of gray in this movie. I really love that. The black and white is there is some, but it's really more shades. You know, and
right.
And that's what we were aiming for anyway.
My father used to have a saying that I remember him. He used to say a lot when me and my sisters would fight, you know, or get on each other's skin. He'd always be like, "It takes two to fight."
Yep,
you know,
absolutely.
Fight alone.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it's oh man, well, it's such a great film. So let me ask you. So you mentioned the writer Michael H. Harper. Did you guys know each other before this came about, or how did?
Oh yeah, absolutely. We've collaborated
get
for
involved.
Several years.
Okay.
Yeah, Michael
nice.
Produced
nice.
My previous feature, a film called Attack of the Morningside Monster. And
mm-hmm.
And Stacey Palmer, who's our other producer on this movie, she produced and wrote that movie. So they kind of traded
oh, wow.
places. So Michael produced
oh,
and wrote
awesome.
This one. And yeah, and so I've worked with both of them for several years now. We had some things available to us. We were looking to make the next film. We'd gone down a road of a couple different projects, and you know, if for whatever reason, either it was too expensive or it didn't quite have the right elements. We didn't have another one for 2 or 3 years, and we finally said we got to do something. And we had the property that we shot a lot of this movie at. We had that available to us, and we knew it. Catherine Tabor, who's one of our you know leads in this movie, Dr. Allison. She was in my previous film, but in a smaller role, and we had remained friends and had wanted to do something together again. We kind of just said, Michael, why don't you, here's what we've got. We've got these things available to us. We've got Catherine who's willing to be in this film if we give her a good story. And here's some stuff I've been thinking about, some thoughts, pitch me something. And so he goes away and comes back a couple of days later and pitches basically this movie. Like, we went through maybe three drafts and we adjusted a few things, made a few changes, but in general, it's very close to what he originally pitched. So
that's fantastic. That is
yeah.
fantastic. Now, Catherine, man, now she's done some stuff. She does all that Star Wars stuff and whatnot.
Yeah.
You know, that's pretty cool. And that's pretty exciting. And
she's
a hell of an
actress. She is super talented. For those that don't know, she is the voice of Amidala in the Clone Wars cartoon series, and she's been in several of the games as well. She in that the infamous Star Wars Detour show that's never come out, but they made two seasons of. She played Princess Leia in that. So she
I
is.
bet you. I bet you that'll drop though. Now that
It
all the
will.
Star Wars, I mean, you know, when they
It
announce
will.
hundreds.
I think particularly because Star Trek Lower Decks has been very successful, and it's a very similar kind of, sort of irreverent take on the material. So yeah, I think that that'll come out one of these days, and it should. It's like the clips I've seen, which are just the clips that have been online, are very, very funny. But she's done all that. She was recently on Walking Dead World Beyond. She's just kind of all over the place. But super, super skilled, and we're lucky to have her play Allison in this film.
No, that's awesome. Everybody was great, though. I really,
Yeah.
She was fantastic, of course, but everybody did just a bang up job. I really enjoyed this film. Let me ask you, when you were a kid, were you like the film kid? Were you filming stuff with a camcorder around the house and every, make a movie? Did you enjoy it?
No, that's
Were
an
you making
interesting
movies
question.
what you were going to be doing?
Yeah, no, that's an interesting question. No, I thought I was going to be in a band. I definitely thought I was going to be in a band.
Okay. Well,
And what happened was, it's really
mind.
funny. I went to college. Oh, go ahead. Do you want to follow up or? Okay, so I went to college, and then when I got out of college, I moved to Athens, Georgia, which big music town, right? Again, still thought I was going to be in a band. And I did so partially because one of my closest friends was attending grad school at UGA, and I just kind of wandered down there to visit and found a job. So I was like, well, I guess I'm moving here then. And but what happened was I ended up moving before my friend. My friend ended up staying home, and we grew up in Richmond, Virginia, and he ended up staying at home for a few months to like kind of work and make some money before he came to school. And all of a sudden, I'm sitting in Athens, Georgia, by myself. I don't know anyone, right? And I'm a little bit of an introvert. I'm not like a super strong introvert, but I'm introverted enough that like the idea of going out and making friends in a town that I don't know anyone, it was daunting for sure. And so I started watching a lot of independent films. There's a really really good video store there, and at the time, when you still rented videos at the store, I just watched a lot of independent films, and I had this moment, which I think every filmmaker, I truly believe every filmmaker has this moment where they're watching something, we're watching films, and they're like, I could do this better. Like it's almost an ego moment you have to have, right? I can do this better. I can get this. And
Absolutely.
you're wrong, right? Like you're completely wrong and you don't know anything. And as soon as you start making films, you realize you don't know anything. But you have to have that moment to try. And so I started writing. And then my friend shows up, ready for school, and I was like, "Hey, we're gonna make a movie." And he's like, "What?" And so, but it's
Nice.
interesting because we started making friends, we started meeting people and who had skill sets, and we started making little small films, and then finally, one day down the road, 10 or yeah, probably 10 years later, I realized I'd been making on the side, I'd just making little hobby movies, and I was like, I should really try and take this seriously. I should really try and do something bigger, and I met Stacy around that time, and so we did a 30-minute short based on a Stephen King short story where we got the rights called Survivor Type. It's one of the really gruesome stories he's written, and we did
Absolutely.
that.
One of my favorites.
Yeah, it's really yeah, mine too. It's so good. And so we did that, and then turned it into our first feature, which is Attack of the Morningside Monster, and then went through the distribution, the festival and distribution process, and then we started back with this one, and now we're here. So we've got two features,
That is
and we're
awesome.
in the tentative plans for making a third, because that's what you do, you just keep going.
And now, folks, a couple quick messages from some of our show sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of the interview after these quick messages.
This is a message from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Older adults and people of any age who have serious underlying medical conditions are at higher risk for severe illness from COVID-19. If you are at higher risk, you should stay home as much as possible and avoid close contact with people who are sick to protect yourself. Call your doctor if you have concerns about COVID-19 and your medical condition, or if you get sick. For more information, visit cdc.gov.
Metal Babe Mayhem is super excited about their newest venture with MBM Music LLC. With MBM Music, we'll provide artists with a full-service platform to be seen and heard by assisting with necessary products, services, and fashion, all in an effort to increase exposure, fan base, and income. For more information, visit us at mbmmusicllc.com. That's mbmmusicllc.com. You create, we promote, plug in to the network.
Glittering amethyst, energizing citrine, colorful fluorite, the other side of the sun, Earth's treasures brought to light. Since 1999, we have offered a unique collection of hand-selected minerals and gems for every budget, for novices, collectors, and healers. Visit www.tosots.com to view our wide selection of offerings and use coupon code ROCKS, that's R-O-X-X, for 10% off your first order. Remember, TOSOTS.com, Earth's treasures brought to light.
Hi folks, Jamie Rocks here. Hey, if you're a big fan of cool historical books, like me, then you're going to want to check out our newest show sponsor, Michelle Albion, a fantastic author. She's got some really interesting, cool books out that you're going to want to check out. I'm a big fan of all of these. The Florida Life of Thomas Edison, The Quotable Edison, Quotable Henry Ford, Quotable Eleanor Roosevelt, and of course, The Quotable Amelia Earhart. Michelle's just very keen and very, very cool. And these are just very cool books. So check out her website. There's links to where you can pick these up on Amazon and Barnes & Noble all over the place. MichelleAlbion.com. 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 Very, very cool stuff. Check it out, folks.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. See, before you know it, you will have as many as Hitchcock did. It just goes to show that, when you're passionate about something, and you're absolutely right. I don't think that there's anything wrong with on-the-job learning or training or what have you, the sink or swim type deal. Because you learn, no matter what you're doing, you learn what works and what doesn't.
There's no, like, film. I did not go to film school. A lot of filmmakers do, a lot of filmmakers don't. It just depends on your path.
Right.
But there's no, for me, there is no better education than dive in and screw something up, try to make it, screw it up and figure out how you screwed it up and then just iterate and get better and better. And I made a bunch of these short films and a lot of them are not very good. And I freely admit that, but I couldn't get to the point where I could make a good film until I had made several bad ones, so.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. And I'm not in the movie business. I'm a cinephile though. I'm that friend you have that makes you watch weird movies with subtitles. And,
right on. Yeah. Excellent.
Well, we're going to watch Jacob's Ladder and then have a 3-hour conversation about it afterward. I'm that guy.
Right on.
And I just had this love affair with film. I think it's fantastic. It's the modern equivalent of like Renaissance painting. You storytelling. That's what it is, and it is. It's really fantastic. But that being said, I probably have a warped sense of glamour to it. I have some friends that I've been on their sets of smaller independent films, and I'm amazed. At just how many hats people have to wear, and people know what they're doing, different jobs and stuff. It's
right.
Crazy.
Yeah. No. It's absolutely.
Cool too.
Yeah, it is. You know, and I've been mine have been they've varied in size. You know, like sometimes it's like four people, right? And everyone's doing 17
right.
jobs. And then Morningside Monster, we had some days where there were 40 people on set, which is a little. It's not quite
wow.
a studio feature, but it's definitely a bigger sort of production. In this film, we kind of split the difference. We had a kind of a core crew of probably about 10 people, you know, but yeah, like it's definitely not. There's never enough money in any film. There's always, you know, everyone has to take on at least two or three jobs at minimum to make sure it all gets done. And you know, the producers in that scenario, the producers are always, you know, they're producing and they're, you know, doing some sort of on-set job, and they're, you know, it is what it is. It's the nature of the beast, but it's how things get made, you know, like because filmmaking is such an interesting art form in that it is almost 100% collaborative. There's very rare occasions where one person can make a film by themselves, but it's rare. And it is expensive. It's a very expensive medium
right.
to work in. It's a little easier now. The cameras that you can buy, you know, like I have a Blackmagic Pocket 6K camera that cost $2,000 that was, you know, 10 years ago it would have been unreasonable to think you could get the kind of images you can get on a $2,000 camera. You know, it's unbelievable. So the technology has made it easier. The barriers to entry are smaller, you know, and that's good. But it's, you know, it's still an expensive hobby, getting people, paying people, particularly skilled people, right, which is what you want. And then getting people in one place and doing the things you have to do. It's a very complex art form in a lot of ways. And so the fact that it's being done so much now is, to me, it's just, even though it has its own like sort of problems to some degree, like I love it. I love that anybody can pick up a cheap camera and go shoot a movie now. And I just think that that's kind of an amazing thing that only exists now. Like it hasn't existed
mm-hmm.
for a good part of my life, where you couldn't just pick up a camera when I was 15, you know, like a video camera
right.
when I was 15 cost you know, $1,592 or something, you know, and was just a crappy video camera, you know, like it's just a different world now, you know, so.
Oh yeah, and if you wanted those big cool drone shots, well, you didn't have a
right?
drone, you had to get a crane, you know,
right?
go
or a helicopter
crane for the day, or a helicopter.
Yeah.
you know, and it's so crazy, but at the same time, hey, and I want to say, your film, now, I don't know anything about cameras and all of that. I know a little bit about lighting because, you know, it's what I do. But as far as painting goes. But the thing is your film doesn't look like an inexpensive film at all. I don't know. You had mentioned a Mark VI or something. I don't know.
I had
exactly.
a Pocket 6K. That's my new camera, though. We actually shot this film on the staple of indie, like at the time, one of the staples of indie cinema, which is a Panasonic GH4, which is just a very, you know, cost-effective mirrorless DSLR that now they have a GH5, but I mean, it's still a very common camera. I would say the pocket camera. What's that? Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, that's down to
great,
two guys.
Yeah.
That's down to Brian Redding, our cinematographer, our DP, and then Brandon Bishop, who is his like kind of right hand lighting and electric experts. And they just, you know, like they do their job well. They know, I've worked with Brian on many films. He knows what I like. He has improved his craft. I've watched him over the years. He's just become a stunningly good cinematographer. And in that regard, like it's very easy for me to go, yeah, they make me look good. I have opinions on how things are lit, but they know so much more than I do that I let them do their job and just we adjust if there's anything I don't like, which is fairly rare.
Right.
So.
Well, it's like I said, it just looked when I you know, watch it. I was like, man, this just, because you hear, and there's, it's funny because there's kind of all these buzz terms that you hear, buzzwords, you know, well, it's a micro budget thing. You know, it's, well, we had this amount of money and it all got spent on this, you know, type deals. But this seems real well, you know, filmed real well. I loved it. I thought it looked great.
Thank you, man.
It didn't look like I was watching something that, you know, your friend, we didn't, nothing was on TV, so we made a zombie movie with my phone last weekend.
Hey,
and
right.
Nothing wrong with that. Oh, hey, do that, you know, it's something you want to do. But this did not look like that, you know. I was very impressed. And you had, you know, those explosions. Man, I don't want to give anything away. Those were great, though. I liked them.
Yeah, and Stacey Palmer, our producer, speaking of wearing multiple hats, Stacey Palmer is also our VFX artist. So she did all of the, and we won't talk too much about it, although clearly there were some explosions, which I don't think that's early on in the movie. I don't think that's necessarily a spoiler, ultimately, but there's some explosions and there's some other interesting VFX work that shows up later. And, she did all of that. It's very helpful. Right. Like I have tried very hard to surround myself with talented people who do their jobs
right.
well. And have been very fortunate in that regard that they keep sticking around and not run away screaming. So
awesome. It reminds me, I was reading a book, a biography about David Bowie, I don't know, a few months ago, and somebody had asked him in some interview, you know, they're like, man, everything you do is just like super artistic, you know, super artistic and just great and, you know, blah, blah, blah. How do you do that? And he said, I work with the best people in the business. And when you work with the best, that's what you get. You
right.
know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Your collaborators are in like everything that comes out, particularly in a collaborative medium, right? Your collaborators and their skills are going to reflect what you can get, you know, what you can accomplish. And I am very fortunate to have some extraordinarily talented friends, basically.
Well, that's great advice too for people, because you know there's a lot of people out there. There's probably a lot of people listening to this this or the podcast in the future that want to be filmmakers. They want to be doing what they want to be. Chris Etheridge, you know, that's what they want to be doing. And you know, he's making movies and going to fancy parties and, you know, doing all
well,
this stuff.
One of those two things is true.
You know? But no, they, you know, that's great advice. Be nice to people because you never
yeah.
know. You might be working with them 2 years down
yeah.
the road.
Oh, yeah. Well,
you know?
Yeah, you got to. Yeah, you cannot be. Like it, particularly in indie film, if you have a bad attitude, it everyone knows it very fast and no one wants to work with you. And I've seen it happen. I've seen people, you know, basically,
mm-hmm.
you know, ostracized because they treat people poorly and you can't do that. So, yeah.
Absolutely. I was thinking about that yesterday when I saw that little Tom Cruise news story. I'm like, come on, Tom.
Right.
Real bad.
Well, yeah, I mean.
This is a better way to handle things.
Yelling on set is always, I don't yell on set. I don't think that's conducive to good stuff. I feel like if you know, you listen to him and it's not just the movie. Like that's the frustration of 9 months of this terrible
right,
situation.
Right, delays.
Like just bursting out. And I think we can all at least sympathize a little with the frustrations if nothing else. But yeah, yelling
thing,
on set is not a good thing.
Well, the thing in that particular news story that everybody was talking about, and I saw no one mention it, but I have seen a couple, you know, usually a movie he's in, it's not a big surprise when you see the producer credit
right.
with his name
oh, yeah.
on it as well. You know, so
yeah,
when you've
yeah.
got a few bucks, you know, and they're like, well, we got a delay for 2 weeks, you know, because it isn't just, well, we're not making money for 2 weeks, it's costing a lot of money for 2 weeks, you know, and
it is, but you know, his concern seemed to be focused on the crew not getting paid too, because that's what happens. You shut down for 2 weeks and no one gets paid for 2 weeks. So it's, you know, it's a, yeah, I mean, you know, yeah, it's an interesting story because he blew up, but I mean, the concerns behind it are all real, and and every single production out there is facing them. Like, I won't shoot. Like, I don't see any. I certainly won't make a feature. I've toyed with making a very low crew short, but even then, like, it's just like, is it even worth it? You know. But we won't shoot anything until probably June of next year at the earliest, just with once vaccines are widespread.
Right.
Just because, yeah,
right.
You don't want people to, like,
smart.
You don't want people to get sick. Like, it's not even, you know, it's just one of those things. It's like, it's just the risk of if one person gets sick, even if they don't, nothing bad happens to them. Maybe they take it to somebody and something does happen. And that just kind of hangs over me as like, you know, it's okay. Like, because I do this, it's not a full-time job for me. You know, I do one every 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. And I try and take it as professionally as possible, but it's not how I earn my living. So I have the luxury of saying, you know, I don't need to shoot right now. There's nothing, you know, it's a little different when that's your career and not shooting means you don't eat. And I completely understand that. And, you know, but indie film is rarely a career, right? Indie film, like studio film is a career. Indie film is not really a career. So, you know, in that regard, like, I just think making the safe decision is to just wait. It'll be there in 6 months. It'll be fine, you know? So.
Absolutely. And you're spot on. I literally was having a conversation, not last night, the night before, with someone I knew. I don't want to say her name, but, you know, her and her husband, I hadn't talked to her in a while. And we were talking on the phone, and I said, well, how are you guys doing? You know, everything going? And meaning her and her husband. And she said, yeah, well, we've been sick. We're out of quarantine in a couple days, in about a week. And I said, holy, you know, of course you get all worried. You know what I mean? And I said, well, what happened? You know, where'd you pick this up? You know, do you have an idea? You know, because it could be anywhere, really.
Sure,
and
yeah.
She goes, oh, yeah. One of her husband's friend's wife was real sick, and then her husband's friend didn't have any symptoms or anything, but just traveled on down the road or the wire there. And, you know, so this does happen, and it's been a crazy year. You know, the weird thing about it, I think more people would take it serious, and I'm not by any means trivializing the whole thing, but it's got a weird component into that it's almost unseen in a way. Like, you remember when Ebola was out and that was the big thing and they were showing pictures of people bleeding out of their eyes and everybody's like, ooh,
right.
I don't want that.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I haven't seen – maybe they should have – okay, here's your nightly 10 minutes of people hooked up to ventilators, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
You don't see that, you know. But I don't know, you know. Hopefully, I think you're doing it smart, though. I think you're doing it real smart. And now, folks, a couple quick messages from some of our show sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of the interview after these quick messages.
There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects with household cleaning spray. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Support for this podcast comes from the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, ranked one of the top cancer centers in the nation for the last 27 years. The doctors at MD Anderson treat more rare cancers in a single day than many physicians see in a lifetime, and treatment plans are tailored to an individual patient's needs, allowing more comprehensive and thorough care. To become a patient, please visit makingcancerhistory.com.
Aloha. If you have stress in your life or even anxiety and panic, I want to invite you to the Anxiety Coaches Podcast for a way out. The Anxiety Coaches Podcast is a relaxing and inspiring show bringing you lifestyle changes to calm your nervous system and help you heal. Heal anxiety, panic, and PTSD for life. We bring you 2 episodes every week. There's no need to walk this path alone. Join us for a relaxing, informative, and inspiring time and start your journey out of anxiety panic. That's anxietycoachespodcast.com. Aloha.
Hey there, my name is Paige Beattie, and I am the founder of Hats On and Hats Off, which are two separate companies but aligned by the same philosophy of raising cancer awareness and forming smiles. Hats On is a for-profit corporation that sells cancer-specific hats to be proudly worn by you in hopes of raising awareness. A percentage of the proceeds will be donated to Hats Off, which is a nonprofit corporation raising money to buy wigs for cancer patients who can't afford them. That's where we're forming smiles. I believe cancer has touched almost everyone's lives in one way or another, a friend, a family member, a friend of a friend. So please visit our website, www.hatsonhatsoff.com, to learn how you can help raise awareness and form smiles.
Ruxgear, the online web shop of high-end luxury merchandise and products, all featuring original pop art paintings. From La Jolla to Miami to London, www.merch.jamierux.us.
Let me ask you on the business side of,
sure.
You know, making a feature film like this. You got it, as I'm going to be all Hollywood, you've got it in the can, right?
Right.
It's ready
yeah.
to go.
Yeah.
Then you, you know, and you're editing and all this and that, and then you have to put on that hat of you know, finding distribution. Were you involved in that side of things on this as
oh,
well
sure, yeah.
as directing?
Yeah, I am actively involved. Like, yeah, I'm a producer on my films. I'm actively involved in that
I gotcha,
process.
I gotcha.
And, yeah, so we did a traditional sort of festival run. Right. It took about a year and a half. Posting this took about a year and a half, which is longer than I wanted. But I kind of had some outstanding sort of like kind of other obligations in my life. And I couldn't focus on it quite as fast as I normally would like to. And
gotcha.
So I it took a little longer to get it completed, but we premiered in 2018 at the Nightmares Film Festival, which was my favorite film festival in the entire world. And then we went to a bunch of other ones, and then, you know, it took about a year, and then as soon as that was over, I mean, we've been talking to distributors during the year process, but it's usually, unless you just get an amazing offer, it's a good idea to let the festival circuit, like, do it for a year, get it in front of a bunch of different eyeballs wherever you can, you know, and then start talking to people, and you've got some laurels, you get a couple feathers in your cap basically when you're talking to distributors,
right.
You know.
You're better negotiating.
That's
a high ground.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It just helps your position a little bit. And we, you know,
yeah.
I talked to several people, and the problem is, of course, lower budget indie films, there are no good deals out there right now. Like, it's just, they're just not very good. And so, but I had some relationships with a handful of distributors, and one of them, Osiris Entertainment, a guy named Evan Crook over Osiris, he liked the movie. He was a little like, it's everything's such a hard sell right now. And, you know, sometimes movies with a lot of genres mixed in, it's a little harder to market. There is a reason we stuck with just calling it a thriller for marketing purposes. But, he said, I think I can sell this. And he took it out, and Mill Creek, who, is one of the biggest physical distributors left in the country. You know, good.
No, I was going to say, they're right here, right now. That is not some little fly-by-night type deal.
Right,
you know?
Yeah, they're big, and they liked it. They picked it up. They made this incredible cover art. I love it, and then they put it in Walmart, you know. They put the DVD in Walmart, and they got it on all the VOD platforms, you know, day and date, and which I had a little bit of trouble with on some other projects. And I was like, they did everything that I could ask for. So as far as reach, you know, I'm real happy with the distribution. You know, we'll see how, like, we're still way too early in it to see how sales are. And, you know, that's just its own thing. And you just kind of tell people about it, hope that they watch it, hope that they pick it up. It's it's a very inexpensive rental on any of the VOD platforms. If you like commentaries and things like that, if you want to hear me and and my friends talk for an hour and a half over the movie, you can pick up the DVD and it's on there.
That's cool, man. That is cool. I have a friend of mine who's an independent filmmaker, and he's not at the point you're at yet, but he's doing great. You know, he's doing his thing. But he told me something very interesting one time. We were just BSing, and I said, because he loves DVDs and Blu-rays and all that kind of stuff. And I said, well, you get all this stuff. I said, I don't have room in my house to keep all this, as many as I would like. And he goes, but you're not in that business. And I said, well, what do you mean? He goes, for me, that commentary is like taking a class. It's like taking a college class. And I take notes when I watch those, you know? And I'm like,
right.
Very smart.
Right. There's no question. That's how I learned a lot of stuff. I don't do it that often anymore. But yeah, when I was learning filmmaking, and that was kind of on the cusp of when DVD was starting to get real popular. And these commentaries were starting to show up, and I would listen every single one. I'd watch the movie, and I'd watch the commentary right after, and just suck it all up.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's so cool that you guys took time out of your day and schedules and whatnot to do that, you know, and to include it on there and everything, you know. That's,
yeah, it's fun. I love. I did two for my last movie. I like them so much. So we did. We did one with the actors. We did one with the kind of the producing team, and then one with just the actors on the last movie. And we may have a Blu-ray on this one sometime next year, and I might do another one just as a Blu-ray exclusive too. So we'll see.
Yeah, cool. Smart. You're like George Lucas. You're going to be doing. And then we have the director's cut. Commentary.
I don't
45 seconds of additional footage.
I don't think there'll be there might be a direct, like my last movie, I would love to go back and at some point and just change it just a hair. It is one of those things as an artist, and I know you're an artist in a different medium, so you're done, but are you really ever done? You know, there's always that temptation to go tweak and, you know.
Absolutely. I've had a conversation with people too, they're like, oh man, you know, your website's great and blah, blah, blah. And love seeing all the paintings on there. And I'm like, and in my head, I'm thinking, yeah, I was partying. I was pretty wild, 2009 to 2010 there. And you can tell, you know, if I look at those particular paintings and they're not up to stuff, you know. And I didn't ask my, I kind of had mentioned my wife's my big sounding board.
Sure.
But I said, you know, I said, if I ever have like a 3 month or something, I would love to go back and redo those paintings and get those ugly paintings off the website and have them, the right ones, done right on there. She's like, you can't do it, man. You can't do it. There's people that love those paintings from that time, and it's not fair to them. And that's how you were painting at that time, you know?
Right, yeah, exactly.
And I'm like, oh, you know. But, no, I hear you, man. I hear you.
It's a balance.
I have some
love
hate. Absolutely. Absolutely. But this is definitely a great movie. Believe me, this is going to happen this weekend. Just as soon as I get caught up with all these out-of-town orders I got to send out, I got to find Survivor type that you did and watch it, because I'm telling you, it was in the Skeleton Crew, I believe, if memory serves me right. I've read the short story. Yeah, it was right before the one with the kid that went through the hyperspace loop was the next short story.
That's the jaunt. Yeah. That's another classic.
Oh, yeah, I love it. I love it. I'm a big Stephen King fan, though, and it's funny because I have all these, like, snooty friends I went to college with, and they're like, oh, Stephen King, you know, literature people. And I'm like, what are you talking about, man? This stuff's great. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
You know,
Survivor, you know, he's been dealing with that his entire career. Some people don't like horror. And they don't think it's a serious medium. And I don't really have anything to say about that. I think that that's absolutely incorrect. I think that some of our most interesting stories are told in that medium. And I think Stephen King is one of the experts of that type of literature.
And in art, I have argued this since my college day. And you know, when you go to France or whatever, and you hunt down the cave where all the cave paintings are at. You know, right. You see a lot of big, scary monsters on those walls and animals that they were, you know. Here's Ugg getting it with a tusk from a woolly mammoth, you know, through the head. You see a lot of that stuff painted on the walls. You don't see a lot of daffodils and brooks with deer drinking
right.
out of it. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah. The truth is the fear response is very, very, you know, a basic instinctive thing in people, right? And so when you work in a medium that plays with that, you're tapping into something that's not surface level, you know?
Absolutely. Well, that's like with your movie, with Haven's End, man. What's really cool, I'm telling you, because, and I don't want to give anything away. Man, it's so hard.
Right, I know. It's difficult to discuss, yeah.
Oh, man, the forest scene, that's all I'm going to say. The forest, and I'm not getting anything. Yes, there's a forest in the movie. There's a
forest
in the movie.
Yeah, that's fair. A lot of forest.
Right.
Right.
But, man, that was great. That was great. The tension, I'm like, what the hell is that? What's going to happen? You know, is that what I think it is? You know,
right.
Man, that was good. When I'm talking to the TV, that's a good thing, you know.
Good. Yeah,
screen,
absolutely. That's what you want. Yeah, particularly if you're yelling at it.
Well, it's easy to do with horror movies because we all know what's happening from the safety. You know what I mean? We're like, don't go in there. Don't do that. Are you kidding me? But I'm just saying, if you were in that situation, it might be a little different. You know?
Right, sure.
Well, anyway, you are really – you probably know this already, but I'm going to tell you anyway, just in case nobody's told you this yet today. You are fantastic at what you do, so keep doing it,
thank you,
man.
I've been making films for 20 years. That's not something that happens overnight. I take it seriously, and I think I'll be real honest. I didn't necessarily when I first started out. I had fun making films, but I didn't. But I don't know that I thought, hey, I should. You know, this is something I should be more conscious of. You know, I was just playing around, which, I mean, I think that's fine, too. A lot of young filmmakers, that's what they're doing, just learning. But I definitely remember a point where I was like, you know, you should either take this seriously or stop doing it, you know, because it's a
right.
lot of effort and energy. And either, you know, make a choice. And I did. I remember having that moment and going, yep, I'm going to make a choice. I'm going to take it seriously. And all the stuff I've really – super proud of in my career has happened after, you know, like the ball started rolling when I made that choice. And I can see it even to this day. I can see where that started and where I am now. And it's just, you know, it was all about take it seriously, take the people around you seriously, work with good people and make it mean something, you know?
Absolutely. There's a fantastic quote I like by Mark Twain. It's one of my favorite quotes of all time. And he says, there's two very important gates in a person's life, the day they're born and the day they figure out why. And
yeah, love
that.
That's
so true.
Yep,
you know, and the thing is, I tell young people this all the time. This is, I sound like an old man now, but people younger than me, I tell all the time. And even sometimes even people older than me, you have to figure out what it is you need to be doing, what you're supposed to be doing here on the planet. I'm not trying to be all metaphysical or anything. I'm just saying it's weird when you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. When you figure that out, things kind of start happening. At the same time, I've known people, and myself included, when you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Right. Sure. I agree completely. That's great advice. Like, that's really great advice, particularly for younger people, is look, just, you know, part of what you can get the most value out of your experiences when you're younger is to use them to explore all kinds of things and do that very thing. Figure out what you're really here for. Figure out what you're supposed to be doing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you know, it's just part of it, you know. And like you said, learn your craft. Yeah, it might take you 20 years. And believe me, it like you said, it took you that, and it's taken me that, you know, maybe
right.
a little longer. But the thing is you have, and And that job doesn't end. You won't get to a point where you're walking across the stage with a diploma and know everything because things keep changing. Technology. Oh, man, I was just watching, you know, speaking of Star Wars, now I'm going to get on this weird tangent. I was watching right. this video on YouTube about the Mandalorian, and I did not know that they didn't use green screen on or blue screen on that. They had this whole big room where they project that thing.
Yeah,
that's pretty awesome.
It's a very, like, it's this big expensive room with LCD panels all the way around. It is the future of filmmaking, and in fact, I'm working with a friend right now. We are playing with the green screen version of that, right? Like, we're actually, we have Unreal Engine, which is the software that you can use, and some the HTC Vive. I don't know if you're familiar with the 3D. 3D HTC setup. You can use some of the trackers and tie it into the computer and kind of do a very low, a pretty low budget version of that. And we're working through learning that technology right now, because the minute you can do that, the minute you've got the computer and the camera in sync with the background being rendered live in real time, it just kind of opens up a whole new, like, it's again, technology is amazing, and it opens up this whole new world where you can the costs go down, the imagination goes up, and it's not quite indie friendly yet, but it's one of these things I've been exploring. Give it 5 years, it'll be insane, for sure. But it's here now. Like, I mean, it's not cheap. But the fact that they make that show, and I remember watching two or three episodes of the first season before I found that out, and I was like, you mean that's done in a room? You know, like I was like, I just figured they found a desert somewhere that looked great. You know, so it's remarkable what can be done, and it really does, like. It makes things a little bit, one of the things about shooting, particularly on location, and, you know, obviously Haven's Inn is shot 90% outdoors, right? Like it's mostly an outdoor movie. The elements are against you sometimes. It's not their fault. It's not your fault. It's just, sometimes it's going to rain. One of my favorite stories about, in retrospect, it was not my favorite thing at the time, but it's a good story to tell after, is Georgia had been in a drought in 2016. We shot this movie in December 2016. Georgia had been in a drought and had not rained for 130 some odd days. Like it just hadn't rained for 4 months. And the minute we got on set, it started raining, and it rained, three or four of the days we were out there. Got lucky and were able to incorporate that rain into one segment of the movie. Just one of those things, right? The elements are not always kind, and so if you can get a believable experience inside of a room, that makes the logistical part of filmmaking, right? The scheduling, all the stuff that's not sexy but has to be there in order to get things made. It makes that easier. Yeah. And I get that there's some value to, like, going out into a real forest or a real desert and shooting. Like, I get that it's hard to beat the aesthetics of that, but when you can approximate it the way they did in Mandalorian, it's also hard to argue that, you know, sometimes it's just easier and sometimes safer too. You know, like, I mean, if there's some things are just, you know, I've certainly been on sets where it's been way too hot outside, you know, and people are drinking water left and right and sitting down cause it's too hot. And it's, you know, sometimes it's good to think about that from that perspective as well. But I just think it's going to be, like you said, in 5 years, we're going to see content that we wouldn't have dreamed of 10 years ago because it's affordable and people can do it and they can stop, you know, the money again becomes less of a limiting factor and imagination becomes more the thing that you see in your head can become more the thing that you see in your head will become closer to the thing you see on the screen.
Yeah, man. And it's so true. You know, and it's funny because, you know, we grew up, me and you, you know, we're watching Star Trek and the hologram room. I forget what they call it. The holograms. They had a room they went into and they could be, you know, fighting King Arthur or whatever they wanted. And, you know, everybody at that time, I remember a lot of people I knew, they're like, well, you know, in the future, that's how movies are going to be. It's totally you'll be immersed in it and you'll be in the movie, you know. And
right.
And a lot of other people are like, how are you going to do that? And blah, blah, blah. And I'm telling you, the other day, the only people we've seen on the regular is my, they live a couple doors down from, or a couple blocks over from, is my in-laws, my wife's parents. And so my mother-in-law was over, and she's talking into her wrist like Dick Tracy, you know. And I'm like, what is
right.
that? What are you doing? You know. And she's like, oh, that's the new thing, hooks to your phone, and you don't have to go through picking up your phone to you know, talk to somebody or something. And I'm like,
right.
oh, yeah, what a hardship that was. But it's amazing.
right.
And I'm thinking about the hologram room and the immersive. I'm like, that's going to happen before we know it.
Oh yeah. Like you can see that. You can definitely see that coming. And you know, I just think it's amazing. Like, if you think about even, let's say 50, 60 years ago, if you showed up in 1960 with a cell phone, you can just be like, look, I've got a magic box right here that I'm carrying around. And it really is. It's like a magic box for 60 years ago. And now everyone's got one, you know? And I like watching sci-fi shows like The Expanse, you know, just came back and I was watching The Expanse last
mm-hmm.
night. And it's
How
and
is
they
it?
All
Are you
have
digging it?
What's that?
Are you digging season 5?
I am. I'll be real honest with you. Nemesis Games, which is the book that season 5 is based on, is my favorite
mm-hmm.
of all the books. And so far,
nice.
The season, it's living up to it. So I'm very excited about this season. But it's always interesting to see how sci-fi, like future projecting shows, have, you know, they've got their whatever their cell phone version is, right? They've got the little hand tablets that they carry around with them. You know, and the question is, will that even be real in 300 years, or will we all just have like little iPads
right.
or something? You know, like it's but it reflects hey, this is where we are now, let me give you something a few hundred years in the future that is analogous to it but not quite the same. And I just think that's interesting. How they handle
it. Oh,
that,
yeah.
So.
Absolutely. I remember watching a couple years back, this is, I don't know, maybe 10 years now, it was that movie Cloud Atlas that came out.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And it was a weird, you know, it was one of those,
yeah.
It's, you know, if you want a weird movie night, that's one you put on, you know, along with Jacob's Ladder or something. But anyway, there was just one little throwaway line in that movie where they're in the part of the movie, they're in the future, and he wants to get his gal, who's a clone, but he's like, hey, let's watch a movie, was the gist of it. But he's like, hey, let's watch a Disney. And the word Disney had been supplanted over in their...
Oh, right.
Oh, you know?
That's funny, yeah.
And when I saw the big release the other day when they announced all those new projects, they're like, well, yeah, Netflix, we're doing this. I remembered that, and I'm like, it's probably going to happen quicker than we know.
That's
yeah.
no joke. Like that, I watched some of that that live stream. That's like they basically said, hey, if you've ever liked anything we've ever done, we've got a new version of it coming for you. It was nuts.
Absolutely. And I live in South Florida, but I've only lived here about 10 years. My wife's a lifelong resident, and so I am new to the Church of Disney. we worship it several times a year. We go to the, you know, stay in the nice resort and whatnot. But, you know, we were watching that live stream, and she's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm watching this Disney thing. She goes, oh, yeah? And I was kind of telling her about it. She's really into cosplay. And she's more into
that right
than I am. And I'm like, yeah, I said, Disney didn't make, they lost money this year with the pandemic at their parks, so they're making it up now.
That's right.
They
lost money on the parks. They did just fine on Disney Plus.
Exactly. And, you know, it's interesting, and that's one of the things, and again, I'm not making light of this year and the terrible, you know, 300,000 people now,
passed
on.
Right.
It's crazy. But one of the things, to make a half joke here, not about that, but one of the things, though, from this pandemic and the lockdowns is everybody knows how to work a Roku now. You know, even grandparents. Everybody gets how to stream, you know? And that's an amazing technology. Do you remember when Netflix first came out? I mean, when they would send you the movie and then you had to send it back in a couple of days and everything?
Yeah.
It would be like, hey, this would be so much easier if I could just press a button and watch whatever.
Now it's like, hey, 4K stream straight to your house, not a problem. There's 15 different companies that do it, right? Like it's definitely technology is, you know, I don't want to say it's not a double-edged sword because, you know, like it does a lot of good things and then sometimes it does some bad things, but it's definitely. I'm super happy to live in the era I live in. I like watching all this stuff evolve, and being a part of it. Like it's absolutely fascinating.
Absolutely, and you know, one of the cool things that you can stream right now, and we're coming up on the big weekend and holiday get-togethers and whatnot. And what better to watch on a holiday, get together, then, you know, surely you're sick of Hallmark movie. I'm not trashing Hallmark, but we all know those types of movies. Put this one on, you know, especially if you have some siblings that are not getting along.
Yeah.
You can say,
there you go.
Look what can
there
happen. Get it together.
Yeah.
We need you both. You know, but no, Haven's End, man, you can watch it. It's out.
It is out, baby. On iTunes, Amazon, Vudu, Fandango Now, Google Play, whatever your VOD preference is, it's there. And then if you like physical media like I do, it might still be in Walmart stores. They cycle through those pretty quickly, so I'm not sure if it's still there. But you certainly can pick it up on Amazon and BestBuy.com, Target.com, all the big Walmart.com, all the big box store, their online presences have the disc available for order, and I think it's pretty cheap. I think it's like $10 or something, so it's not expensive.
Oh, that's the deal. Hey, and folks, I suggest you get the physical media copy because Chris even said earlier, you know, that he's making these films, you know, and they all do these festival circuits and whatnot, and if you have the physical thing, why, you know. Follow him and, you know, on social media and whatnot, find out where he's going to be. Then you corner him and you make him sign it. And, you know, then
there
if you're
you
ever in
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I'll be real honest. As soon as it's feasible, I will be at every festival I can possibly be at. I miss that. That is one of the things I miss more than anything else this year was not being able to go to festivals.
Oh, I'm telling you, my wife her and her sister have this business where they make costumes and props and stuff for cosplayers. And so they're always at these cons. And it's kind of funny because in our family, you know, I do all these art shows and this and that, and, you know, and she's very good. Nobody can work a room better than my wife. She is, you know, tells me who to talk to and what. Well, you need
right
to
on.
Talk to
yeah, that's awesome.
Her, you know. Yeah, she's great at that. But people always ask me, they're like, so do you go to these cons with her? And I'm like, I kind of don't because she's the superstar there. And, you know, everybody knows her. She's been on TV a bunch of times and stuff and locally here. And I'm like, I'm kind of second, you know, chopped liver, you know. Everybody's like, who's that guy?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I let her have her fun. And I think she has a – I'm joking, of course, folks, but be honest, like that and Ren Fair, she loves those. She won't allow me to go to the Ren Fair, though. She's like, it will be so boring because you'll just point out how wrong everything is. I'm like, no.
Right. That's not historically accurate. What is that nonsense?
Nobody had elf ears. What are you kidding? They have lights. No, it's just a lot of walking that I don't want to do. Anyway. Chris, this was so much fun, man. You had mentioned at the beginning of the show that you've got another project that's in post-production right now.
No. In pre-production.
Pre-production. Yeah. Okay. Pre-production.
Yeah.
Well, when it's ready,
on...
I want you back on the show. You know.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, anytime. This has been a fantastic experience, man. I really appreciate it.
Oh, very cool. I did too. Well, what do you think? You think that's going to be what you think? Summer? Maybe?
I mean, it's probably a couple years. We might start shooting. Probably start shooting. With any luck, we start shooting later in the summer, and then. And then it's a year and a half process to go through the whole, post and the festival circuit. Although, when it's out in the festival, like we do some press at that time as well. It's just not widely available. So it's like, yeah, if we're coming to the city that happens to be the festival that you're in, you can see it. Otherwise you just hear us talking about a movie you can't see for another year. So it's quite as interesting,
That's very true. It's funny. A lot of people don't realize, and that's a big part. That can be a big part of an independent movie's budget as well. Is the festival circuit?
Sure.
Just send them in for free.
It's a line item. The travel costs alone. It's a line item for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Well, hey, you've made a new friend here in South Florida. So if you got any of these coming up, we have a guest room.
Oh, that's
so
awesome.
There you
Thanks,
go.
Man. I appreciate that. We played Miami before. Well, not this movie, but our previous movie played something in Miami.
Nice.
I want to say it's like the Super Geek Fest or something. Super Geek Con. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah, I don't know. She always.
Yeah, it was several years ago. I don't remember.
Yeah, she knows them all. She goes to about. I'm telling you, man. She goes to about 25 of these a year. And so this year, she hasn't been able to do that. So she's going crazy. So our guest room, we have turned into a TikTok video recording room.
Oh, nice. Yeah, right on. Yep. But that's great for cosplay. Like, that's a really great avenue for that.
Well, it gives her something to do. It gives her something to do. Keeps those gears, those creative gears turning.
And I think that's right? Like, this year has been... in a lot of ways, figuring out new avenues for expressing yourself and still keeping that creativity flowing.
Absolutely. Well, I have had so much fun today. You are a blast to talk to, Chris. Just keep doing what you're doing, man. Like I said, you're so good at it. This is a great film, everybody. Haven's End. I want everybody to get this and watch it this weekend at the very least, check it out. Everybody's great in it. This is one of those movies that'll just, you'll be thinking about it for hours and hours afterwards. Yeah, I think that's a good thing. Cool, man. Well, Chris, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to be on the show.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. This is a great time.
Awesome. Well, folks, that's going to wrap it up for us today. We will be back tomorrow. We've got another cool filmmaker on tomorrow. There's a very cool series right now on Amazon Prime called L.A. Macabre, I believe it is. And that's what I had to look at my notes here. I've got the Chris notes in front of me, not the Ryan Hellquist notes tomorrow. That's who's he's the star of L.A. Macabre. He's going to be on tomorrow, so tune in for that. That, man, that's a scary series, let me tell you. Very cool, though. Anywho, have a great one, everybody. This episode, of course, will be converted to a podcast and pushed out on all the various social media platforms and on all the podcasting platforms that we're on. We're on like 250 of them. You name it, we're probably on it. iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Spotify, all that kind of, Apple Podcasts, all that stuff. So you can check us out anytime on that. Or you can go to my website, jamierocks.us, JAMIEROXX.US. And, this is episode, 1,050 or 1,060 or something like that. So we got a lot of shows in archives, which is awesome. And we'll have another one in the archive here directly. This will be, like I said, converted to a podcast. That's when we add all the commercials and all that stuff in. And that'll be available shortly. Thank you so much, Chris. You rock.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you, man.
Talk to you soon.
Have a good one.
This has been pop art painter Jamie Rocks's Pop Rocks Radio Talk Show.
It has been executive produced by Jamie Ross, recorded at his studio in Deerfield Beach in South Florida. All rights reserved by Pop Rocks Limited for broadcast on Blog Talk Radio.
Tana Oli, Pop Rocks Radio.
Estás escuchando Jamie Rocks de Pop Rocks Radio. Manténganse al tanto.
Hej, det här är Hicks från Sverige och ni lyssnar till Pop Rocks Radio med Jamie Rocks.
Blog Talk Radio.